Hello and welcome to the Conscious Consulting Podcast, where we will introduce you to the Conscious Consulting philosophy. Together with our senior advisors from all around the world, we blend the deep knowing of wisdom traditions, technology, modern science, and business, and show you how to transform this wisdom into impact in your daily life as a consultant, leader, or entrepreneur. Welcome to the CCG community. If you are a startup founder, entrepreneur, or a young leader, this episode is for you. My guest today is Céline Billy Malenzon, a remarkable founder, businesswoman, and startup consultant. At the end of the 90s, Céline and her partners built up one of the first email marketing software companies in the world, grew it up to 200 employees, and sold it successfully. Today, she's an advisor at the Conscious Consulting Group and a consultant for brand building, purpose, and culture development. She also coaches startup founders for self-mastery. In our podcast conversation, Céline talks about the role of consciousness in a startup world, how founders can stay conscious in a highly stressful environment, and what it was like to cultivate a company culture with 200 employees. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this wonderful conversation on the Conscious Consulting Podcast. Hi, Céline. Thank you so much for taking the time to come to the Conscious Consulting Podcast.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure for me to be here with you. I'm very excited.
It's a pleasure for me too. So, Céline, you founded several highly successful businesses in your life. You built up your company, Related Digital, from scratch up to 200 employees, and then you sold it successfully. And now we are here because you are an advisor at the Conscious Consulting Group for leaders and founders in the startup world. So yeah, my first question would be, why do you prefer to work mainly with founders?
Why with founders? As you said in this introduction now, my first reason to do is I've been there. I know that business, and I think to create something from the scratch is the most powerful endeavor you can do in your life. So I had the whole thing, you know. I came with the idea, I found the right people, my friends came to me, we were three partners, and we worked at my mother's kitchen and came up with the ideas and how we can make the product. And so it was a lot of fun. And then you create the company and you're very excited. You have no idea how it's going to be. And then you have your first client. It's like a miracle. And then you continue to do it. It gets bigger. And then you have other problems, other challenges you have to tackle with. And then a point comes where you look at other companies, if I can buy a company because I want to go bigger. So I mean, it's an amazing thing. So, and I learned a lot of things. We did a lot of things right, but we did also a lot of things very wrong. So I think it would be nice to share it with the founders, because I think, and I have also a professional background, and I had a very good supporting system when I was in the professional world. And when I jumped in the startup world, there was nothing. I mean, people think if you're a founder, you're a born leader. So you can handle stress because you have a purpose. Yes, if you have a purpose in life, you wake up very energized in the morning. So you have the energy and you want to do things, but it doesn't mean that you're superhuman. So you're a normal person just with a good idea. So, and I think in the startup scene, the most overlooked part is the mental health of the founders and their leadership developments. So I think I can be a little bit help of that. To show founders how to create a support system so that they can act better. It is my hope, at least. So I think that's the reason. The first reason is I know the business, I have a lot of experience, and I love to share these things.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I can tell from experience that this is so important, like having this emotional support, this mental support, like all the know-how and all things, you will figure it out. But sometimes you really need this mental guidance. So, and now you're an advisor also for conscious consulting. And so my question would be, start the world and consciousness. Do you think it excludes each other, or does it fit together?
Oh, I think it fits together perfectly, because it's the most conscious thing you can do when you create something from the scratch. You know, when you start to create something, you have this clear beginner's mind. So you live in the present because you have to concentrate so much. And if you concentrate, that means you're living in now. And if you're living in now, you're aware of yourself. I think the starting point of a startup is the most conscious state, inner state someone can be in. Of course, to stay like that is not that easy. To have this beginner's mind all the time is not easy. At the beginning, you really don't have problems with that. So you don't know what the future is going to bring. So you just have an idea. So all the people are your friends. You create something together. So there are no hierarchies or something like that. You're a humble person trying to create something, and that's it. And you don't see anything. So people always ask me, the idea is always coming from inspiration, Selin. And I said, no, sometimes it comes from desperation. Because if you're desperate, you have nothing to lose. And if you're inspired, you think there is nothing you can lose because you believe so much. And I think it's the same thing. So when you think there is nothing to lose, you are in the present moment and you're doing it from your heart. You are in tune with nature and everything is very natural. But with time, it changes. There are a lot of pitfalls on the way, especially it begins with the fundraising. And when you start to think about money, how I can raise money, sometimes your first intention goes to different directions. So when a startup founder comes to me and say, Selin, I want to create this company and in 2 years I want to sell it. And I look, come on, guy. It can't be your purpose. It can't be the thing. So if I see a person like that, most probably I say, 70% is not going to be successful. I'm sure there are exceptions. Yeah, I mean, it should be goal. If it's really the goal to make money, it's a different story. But if your goal is to create something, you shouldn't be thinking of money. So when we created Related Digital, we never thought of selling the company. The only thing we wanted to create was creating this software that you can send emails with pictures on it. So that was the only thing we had in mind. We didn't think about money. We didn't make about making the company bigger and bigger so we can get some funds or finances. We just wanted to create a good product. And for us, of course, money was important, but in terms to survive. So we wanted to make money. The company had to be profitable. So, and it was always in our mind. I mean, 20 years we worked like that. And then, of course, when a point comes where you think strategically and says, can we continue with that work? Or is it better to be a part of a bigger organization? Then you can think of selling the company. This is my view. Of course, some endeavors needs money at the beginning. So you need to think about raising the money, but it should be not the main intention. It is only a vehicle to get to your point. So this is the point where maybe you're not conscious anymore. And the second pitfall, in my view, is dealing with the stress, dealing with the failure. And there are a lot of conflicts between the co-founders usually. And these things, of course, pulls you up from being conscious. And if you ask me what is being conscious, my explanation would be very simple for you. For me, to be conscious is only to be aware of yourself and to be responsible of your doings. So, and for me, it is that simple. And in all my works, I try to be in that state. So the answer to your question, yes, it belongs together if you can keep it.
Yes, wonderful. And yeah, when you say it's not that easy to stay conscious and to stay in that state, because there are so many things that coming that play into that and that demand your focus and so many things from outside. So what would you say, what is important to stay conscious in such a highly stressful environment like startup world?
I think the word stress is very interesting because I think stress is a made-up thing, this big pressure. I mean, in terms of nature, it's not made up. Stress is something necessary. Stress is needed so you can survive in life. So if you look to our ancestors, they could only survive because they have this stress when they saw an elephant or a tiger. Oh my God, the stress comes out, the adrenaline pushes, cortisol pushes, and your thinking blurs. And the only thing is your instincts. I have to run, fight, or freeze. So stress is something necessary. Also in real life, right now in our modern lives, a little bit of stress is also the foundation of progress. But the problem is, in my view, with stress is this continuous stress situations that we are making up in our thoughts. Because our brain is a very old brain. Okay, so we have to accept that fact. I think the mankind is on this planet for 4 million years. And 1 million years ago, we discovered fire. So if you think this is the beginning for the mankind, for the modern mankind, this discovery of fire, we lived 1 million years the same way as hunter-gatherers, living in a jungle, finding food, escaping from predators, animals, and having a little bit of fun in front of the fire. So that was pretty much the life. And the stress was really death or survival stress. So from the animals or poisoned food or something. But then something happened. So industrial revolution started. And it is only 200 years. I mean, 200 years compared to 1 million years of mankind having always the same life in the jungle. So, and for our brain, I think it's not easy to deal with this complexity that we arrived in this 200 years. And then you might ask me, of course, but we did that. I mean, we did this complexity, so our mind should deal with it, our brain. But I think it's not the case, because all the things we created collectively. So it was not one mind to create it, we needed to create the plane. There are hundreds of people are working so that a plane can fly. So, and if you ask an electrical guy or who did with the electrical parts of the plane, how can you make this plane fly? Most probably he couldn't give you an answer. So we just know a part of the whole, but we can together create this whole. And what we created is so complex, as a single mind, we can't grasp it. I don't even know how the TV functions. So I can't get it. I mean, I was asking this question since I'm 7. How does these things work? So we don't really know. So it is the collective knowledge. And our separate brains needs to deal with this complexity. And when there is an uncertainty, the brain thinks, oh my God, something is wrong. So, and it causes stress. So even if you have a deadline, or if you need to create a great presentation for your work, you have the same stress as if you are dealing with a tiger 1 million years ago. So because this is how the brain works. So the brain thinks every minute we have a survival situation. So I have a deadline. I have to give food to my child. And I have to finish this work for someone. So everything is for us a survival or death situation. So, and if you can understand a little bit the nature of stress, and then it is easier to deal with that. So how can you deal with stress? If you are conscious and if you can decide if it's a real stress or it's a made up stress. So, and then you can maybe calm down a little bit and then create a level of alertness. So it shouldn't be a stress. It should be, I call it a calm alertness. So you have to be alert to achieve things because you need your focus to learn things, to do things, but you should do it in a calm way and not as if you are running from a tiger. So to create this, my personal view and things that I learned during my studies and business life is to observe yourself and to observe, to look at yourself and understand your thinking. Because the thinking is always there. It's coming and going. And when you're in a stress situation, you have a lot of thinking in your mind. And 70% of them are not necessary. So if you can see that, a little bit, a little portion of it, you can maybe calm down yourself. And if you're calm, you can deal with the situation much better because your brain works better. So the whole idea with consciousness and stress management, in my view, to understand what's happening to me. So something is happening outside. Yeah, there's always an outside situation and there's always your inner state. So I think the most successful people in life are the people who can regulate their inner state according to the circumstances consciously. So they know what is going on outside and this is something they can't change, but they can change their reaction to it. So, and this inner state regulation is not something very easy. So there are so many ways of doing it. So, I mean, you can look, the Eastern mysticism are working with the thousands of years. We have neuroscience in the Western societies, or psychology and this kind of therapies. So how you can deal with your mind, to understand your mind, to train your brain, to do these meditations, breathing things, which we inherited from the Eastern mysticism. Now we are using it very wisely and very good because we put also reasoning into it and did a lot of researches and understood how it works. And now I think it's a brilliant combination of the Eastern mysticism and the Western realism together create some pretty much good tools for us to train our mind. I don't know if it was an answer to your question.
It was an absolutely wonderful answer. Yeah, super and super clear answer to the question. Yes, thank you so much. How was your own journey with consciousness as a leader and a founder? Could you manage to stay aware all the time, not just in the beginning, or did you lost it somewhere and then you had to go back and find it?
Oh my God. Oh, I experienced a lot. Sometimes I thought I'm going to end up in a mental institution. So it was not easy. And thing is, I was not conscious about my consciousness training on myself because everything started experimental. So because at those times, especially when we started our startup, it was 1999, this kind of schools were not that, they were not around. So we were usually experimenting about these things. I personally did a lot of things when I was young. So I did my first meditation when I was 17, and it was 80s, 90s, I don't know the time, I can't make this up, I don't want to deal with that. And my mother was very concerned about that. And she said, what are you doing, Selin? What is meditation? Because, you know, meditation, chanting, sorcery, these were so, you know, they were not very common things. And then I said, Mommy, don't worry, I'm just looking around. I was a single child. And if you're a single child, you have a lot of time to think about yourself and about observations. So I always searched the meaning of life. And I found meditation very convincing. So I thought, oh, I can try that. But it was really very experimental, so I didn't know what I was doing. And then after a couple of years, I said, oh, yoga, that could be interesting. I was a very sportive person, and I thought, oh, yoga, it's going to be not easy. It's too slow, but I gave it a try. My curiosity was always there, so I was a very curious person. And then I started doing yoga, and I thought, oh, my God, it's interesting. And someone told me, I have no idea who it was. He said, you know what, Selin, if you do yoga, you get flexible. And if your body is flexible, your mind gets also flexible. It really resonated with me. I was hooked up from the idea, if your body gets flexible, your mind gets flexible. So that's why I went more and more into yoga. And I did some breathing exercises. I was doing once in a while meditation. So I had some access before our startup. And when we started in our startup, we were three partners. And we were really lucky because I was the soul of the company, as the person who came up with this idea. But I had someone who was in charge of business, who was in charge of making money. And then we have our third partner who was an IT genius. So he was dealing with the product. So which gave me a lot of room to experiment on leadership, on creating nice teams and experimenting with all new stuff with the people because I had the time. Because it was not responsibility to look how the product is going or are we making money or not money. My single job was really to deal with the people inside of the company and outside of the company, the customers and the partners or venture capitalists or the people who are dealing with us. So and that gave me a lot of room to experiment on things. And the people were coming to my room was always an open door room, and we were talking. We were talking hours and hours with the people, with the employees. I mean, we didn't call them even employees at the beginning because we were like a family. So, and we had all these sessions, 1 hour sessions in my room, talking about life, business, and how we can do things better. And then I realized the people are taking business very seriously, especially in our team. They were coming to my room, Celine, oh my God, I did this wrong. How am I going to make it better? I have a problem with that colleagues of mine. And they were thinking as if there are big, big problems. And then I said, come on, relax. We talk about it. And when you start to listen to them, but really listening, so deep listening, I call it, which fosters also a deep connection. So if you're connected with your colleagues or employees or whatever you call them, something magical happens. They settle down. Their thinking settles down. It's a little bit like a murky water, so you can see through. And when you sit down and someone listens to you, the murk goes down and you have a clarity. And usually they found their own answers without me giving them an advice. So the more they talk, oh yeah, exactly. Why am I mad about this? That's ridiculous. Okay, I got it. I'm gonna do it. So sometimes you sit there like a mirror. So you don't do anything. They just found themselves. And sometimes you need to be a spotlight because sometimes they are so involved in their thinking, they can't come out. And in those cases, I had a methodology and it always worked. And I was always, I'm still doing it. For me, it's business is a game. Yeah. And you should be able to separate yourself from this game. It's a fun game because games should be fun. But there should be also a strategy in it. So you should be thinking, how can I make my moves? How can I go? But you don't take anything personal when you play a game. At the end of the day, it's a game. So if you can see this like that, and if you can separate yourself from the business, again, like an observer, and if you look what's going on there, usually you come up with better answers. Because when your stupid thinking settles down, you have a contact with your inner potential. Some people call it, which I like a lot, the innate intelligence. I really like this word. So because your body, your mind usually knows what is right for you. This is how people are designed. This is the whole universe, how it's designed. They know what is right for them. I mean, if you look to the animals, you see that. Do you ever see a fish can't swim? No, a fish can swim. So we do things with our innate intelligence. People are a little bit different. We can do anything we want. We have this infinite potential that we can create anything. And then it depends on you. You want to use this potential for creating nice things or creating bad things. with this potential. So you can really have a connection with yourself when you look at this as a game, and then you can play it. Then you can choose where you want your stress. I mean, people are coming with problems to me, and I said, do you want to fight with big mountains or with small mountains? So if you want to achieve something, don't care about the small stuff. You have bigger things in life. Fight for them. So not with little things that you have a problem with your coworker or you couldn't do that and that. So concentrate on the bigger goal, then you will see life differently. And another thing, I don't know if it's consciousness or not, for me, is compassion is something very important, to be nice. And it's also your biggest weapon in life. Because if someone comes with you very angry and he shouts at you, first you take it personally because you think she's shouting at you. But you don't know how she's feeling. Maybe she lost her mother last day, or she had a very big problem with her family. You have no idea which made her act like that. So again, if you can separate yourself from the situation and think, no, it's not personal. It has nothing to do with me. It's her reality. And my reality is here. And then if you can give a little bit of kindness to the other side, instead of shouting back, just sitting and trying to understand with nice words, another thing happens. Because if someone comes to you with a gun, and if you have a gun, you start to fight. But if you don't take your gun out, the person stays like that, what am I going to do now? There is no fight. If there is no fight, he says, okay, I don't need the gun. And she puts, or he puts the gun back. So I think this is also a way which is very useful, and I used a lot. But as I said to you, I did all of them very experimental. So I didn't have any training or something about conscious working, leadership or something. It was just a combination of long years experience, the things that I learned in the corporate life, and my personal commitment into the Eastern mysticism. So, and I had the room to experiment with those. I had the time. I think the most challenging part is to find the right people with the same spirit for the company. And that comes, the HR part comes into, I think it's a very, they have a very big role to find the people who are in the same wave, who thinks the way you're thinking. And even if you find someone, he's brilliant, but it doesn't fit to the culture, I always say no to that person. No, it's poisonous. We don't want that. Yeah, he can be extremely good at what he's doing, but this is not what I want in the company. I want the people with whom we can all work together very nicely. But I think the biggest problem is the founder's conflict. So because to deal with the team is for me is much easier. But if you're three people who are trying to lead the company, and the company gets very big, and when you have the power changes everything. So when you have the money, when you have the power, then people start to think differently. So you don't have the beginner's mind anymore. So you more try to, how I can keep my status, can I make more money, how I can keep the money. So you don't think about the business anymore. You start to think about the money more. And this is the point. Actually, that was the point where we said, we're going to sell the company. So if we came to the point that we don't care of what's happening to our product or company, but we are more curious about what's going to be with our money, that's the time to sell the company. So because we can't go further. Because for an IT company, you need to be a global, big, or someone has to buy you. So there is no between. Then we said, okay, with this mindset, we can't get a big global company. So it's time for us to say goodbye, which is also not an easy thing. And then the process started for us to sell the company. And I think it was the best decision we did. It was not easy, but it was the right decision.
Can imagine. Do you think there is a way to prevent like those founder conflicts? So to have like some practices or some work that you can do to stay on the same level or on the same page?
I thought about it a lot. I can't say I came with a solution because if I knew the solution, I would have been still in that company and running it, hopefully globally. But what I figured out is the biggest problem is the communication problem, even between the founders. And we were friends. And to have this open conversation, really have an open conversation, is not an easy thing, especially between the founders. After a while, at the beginning it's very easy because you have all the same goal, and when you see the goals going to different ways, you need to learn to sit down and understand each other. And sometimes there is not a solution, because everyone has its own reality, and if you see this reality is not easy to change, then I don't think there is really you can do about it. I mean, it's like an evolution. So, and you know, I mean, this for this trio, that was the end. This trio couldn't do more. So, and it is not that your potential is not big enough. No, this constellation was not right to go further. The one thing would be maybe to say, now it's a different ball game. We will put the professional people and see what's going to happen. That would be one way. The second way would be we will try with fighting. I don't think it's the right way. And the third thing would be, okay, it's time to say goodbye to these things. So, I mean, I don't know there is another way of changing people. So you can't change. At the beginning, you know with whom you start to dance. So, and then you can't say at the end, oh my God, because of him, we are not a global company. No, because of him, we were an extremely successful company. And at this point, there is no one to blame. So because this is the capacity you have. Then you find different ways how you can deal with it. And we could have still stayed in the company as professionals, or just sell 80% and stay there. So I think you just need to find the solution when you realize your potential as co-founders reached the ceiling, and then you find new solutions. Yeah. Well, thank you for that question. I never thought about it in that extent before.
Yeah, I can imagine that a lot of founding teams have this kind of issues, because it's super hard to be on the same page for all of these years, and everybody's going through their own journey. And yeah, I think it's a common struggle.
Yeah. And the thing is really to appreciate what you have done till now, because everything happened because of that trio or two people, I don't know. So you can't throw it away, all the things you did together. Yeah. And it's a new era, it's a new circumstances, and you're not fitting there.
Yeah, and it's also good to know when you tapped into the full potential and there's no more to give and it's time for the new step.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there are always, as you say, there are new steps. I mean, for me, it opened a completely different way. So I left the whole tech marketing world and now I am a coach. I live in Hamburg, not in Istanbul anymore. Our IT partner, he's doing the same product again with the new technology. So he said, I'm going to continue. So as you see, he's still doing it. And I hope he's going to be very successful. And our third partner, the business genie, who makes the company really a successful company in terms of finance and selling and everything. And he has a completely different life now. So everyone is continuing and no one is sad about that. Because the definition of success is also made up. What is success? Are we successful? Yeah, if you look at one point, we are very successful. It was a huge company, 200 people. We bought company, we sold companies. So we were working also with global names. And so we did everything. But if you look from another side, oh, you created this company in 1999 and there was not such a company on the planet. So you were one of the pioneers. You could have been a global brand. You could have been a Salesforce. You could have been an Adobe. If you look from that part, maybe we were not successful. So it's everything.
What is your own personal definition of success?
My personal definition of success. A very hard question.
I couldn't prepare for that. I didn't wrote you. It just came to my mind, but I think it's interesting.
No. I think it's a good question. I mean, for me personally, success is having a life where you get up every day and you feel lucky and you have something to do. And so, I mean, for me, it's the crucial point is really getting out of the bed. So if I get out of the bed and I'm enthusiastic to do something to life, I consider myself as a successful person in life. So because success is for me not something related to business or your personal, I think success is a whole thing. So a little bit from your relationships, from your business, from your lifestyle. So you can be successful in any area of life. And for me, the shoving point of it is how you get up in the mornings and how you feel about yourself.
I love that. Coming back to your consulting practices with founders, where do you see the biggest struggles? The biggest struggles with founders in being consciousness or in leading the way.
I mean, as we a little bit talked at the beginning, I think their biggest problem is people are expecting a lot of from founders. They expect them to be born leaders. They expect to handle stress very well, to find money very easily, to find the right people. So they accept a lot of things from these people without knowing who they are. So I was coming from a professional background. For me, it was easy to create a business because I did a lot of things. I was coming from big bank. I did a lot of marketing. I did product management. I did digitalization. So for me, a lot of things. And I had a lot of training. So if you're in a big corporate, they pour you with trainings. And my other partner was very good at with companies. So leading companies, all the tax issues and everything. And the third one was extremely capable when it comes to IT stuff. So, and this trio was perfect. So, because we knew. But think a young guy after university, he comes up with a brilliant idea. And the people are, oh my God, it's amazing. You're a genius. But then they forgot he's just out of university. This guy knows nothing. He has no experience in life. So, I mean, you can't expect him to be everything. So, I mean, I think the most problematic part for the founders is the support system. I mean, even for the old ones. Because if it's an IT person create a product, you can't expect him to know how to deal with the finance of a company. So... And you have to understand they are people and they need structure, they need help, and they need also a lot of help when it comes to mental health. So this is the area I am more interested in because I'm done with business world, with the business side. I miss people are still coming for branding, brand building, product management. So it is in my DNA. So I love to do it. But I'm more interested when they come to me to look if their mental state is okay, if they can deal with all those things. So if you can settle down, and look and then create something. Because if they're settled down, if their mental health is there, intact, the rest you can do. Because what you need is to find the right people for your company. But in order to be able to do that, you have to be in a very stable state of mind. So this part for me is the most interesting part. To work with founders, to sit with them, sometimes just listening, sometimes being a mirror, or sometimes to explore together. So open the spotlights and look what is made up, what is real, if they're really overwhelmed with stress or it's a made-up stress. Are there real problems or there are no problems at all? So these things, because I think when you create the core, when you create a person with a mental, physical health and give them a little bit tools how to be a leader, not very deep down, just the basics, I think the rest they can handle themselves very well. I think that's the most crucial thing. So that's why I'm with Conscious Consulting, and that's why I'm trying to do it with the founders.
Wonderful. And yeah, speaking of Conscious Consulting, what are those spiritual or consciousness practices that help your that help you in your advisory? So, and also, in what different fields do you look for answers?
It started very experimental, I have to admit, because I started as a brand consultant. So, and I was giving some brand consultancy, purpose, culture. I mean, and these are vertical consulting. So you have a methodology, and you know what you're doing, and you start to work with a founder, and you create that this is your brand, this is your brand house, this is your purpose, your values. So it's a very systematical thing. But because of my background with yoga, breath techniques, and all these things of stuff, and I was in India for 2 weeks working with a Sadhguru, so I had these little elements in my work. But it was mainly marketing consultancy, so brand building consultancy. And then when Julia and Christian, the founders of Conscious Consulting, contact me, Julia is my school friend from university times in Vienna, she told me about her idea, and of course she wanted help with branding. It started with brand consultancy, and then the deeper we talked, my admiration for Christian and Julia got bigger and bigger because they are involved with Conscious Consulting, so really different kind of consulting and coaching. They had different strategies. They were completely different with the companies. I was really amazed the way they are working with their clients. And I said, oh, you know what? I want to do that too. It's brilliant. I mean, I was doing it unconsciously in my own company. But they are doing it very consciously and more effective. If I knew what they knew before, maybe we would have been a global company. Maybe we could have solved the problems before we saw, oh my God, we came our limit. So maybe we could have do things differently. And I get very interested, and I said to Julian Christian, you know what? I want to be in. I really want to be in, and I want to be your apprentice, so please teach me. And it was very nice. I mean, I was a little bit coaching them and consulting them, and they were showing me a lot of ways, and they have an amazing circle and network. So because for this mental health and for this new kind of coaching, I call it the new kind of coaching, you need to understand a lot of things. You need to understand a little bit from brain neuroscience, a little bit from biology, a little bit from psychological things, and Eastern mysticism, and then you have to combine them. And Julia and Christian is a perfect combination, because Julia is coming more from the Western thinking side, and Christian is more from mysticism side. He's a Zen teacher and everything. I don't even know what it is, but he did some very amazing things. And this combination is perfect. And I learned a lot of things from them and also from their network. And then, of course, I also invest in my own training. I did a lot of trainings with this kind of coaches from United States. I am a member of Modern Mindfulness Alliance, which is also a great thing, I think. I mean, mindfulness, I mean, we are hearing a lot about mindfulness nowadays. And it's an amazing extension of Eastern mysticism. I think it's introduced in 1960s to the Western world by a man called Jon Kabat-Zinn. And they tried to make Hinduism, Buddhism, Zen practices in a little bit of a more practical way so that the Western people can use it more easily. So, and I found that very interesting and I did my training.
Can you give an example of that, how you can make it more accessible for the Western world?
I mean, if you look in the mindfulness practices, it is like an introduction to Eastern mysticism in my view. The main concentration of mindfulness practices is observation. The explanation of mindfulness for Western school is to observe yourself, to observe your body, your breath, your thoughts, without any interpretation, without thinking, just looking. And see what you are. And if your thoughts go away and if you get blurred, take your awareness to yourself again very kindly. So that's the only thing that mindfulness is saying. If you observe yourself, if you open the spotlight to your thinking, to your body, to your breath, why they say breath and body is because it's always there. So if you want to stay in the moment, you need an anchor. And your body and your breathing is always there. So that's why all the meditations and stuff are always something to do with body or breath. Because it's a very easy way to keep your attention in now, in this moment. So, and you concentrate on your breathing and then you realize you have a lot of thoughts. But you can observe your thoughts. So there's always two types of thinking, the thinking mind and the observing mind. So the mindfulness says, if you can stay like an observer mind, and then you can see the thoughts, sometimes you see some patterns and some things that, oh my God, why am I thinking that way? So you get a little bit of conscious how your thinking is working, and you see all the repetitions and you see all the habits you have in you which are automatically done and you don't even realize your reactions. And then you say, why am I doing this reaction? Why am I doing that? So we don't realize in life, but all of our, I mean, 70-80% of our decisions or reactions are automatically. And it comes from our childhood, from our culture, from a lot of things which has nothing to do with now, but these are hardwired in our brain where the neuroscience comes into the place. And you think I have to react like that. I mean, you don't even think because you do it automatically because your brain wants efficiency. For your brain, it's not important if it's right, if it's proper. Your brain needs efficiency. And it's like, yeah, this is how I react. And I react. And when you observe, then you can see these wrong habits, wrong rituals, wrong thinking. And then when you see that, you create a space, an empty space. Because you don't have this anymore, this habit. There is a space where you can put something new willingly, consciously. So that's why mindfulness practices are always together with habit building. So you observe yourself, you create space, and when you have this space, you put something more useful for you. Better rituals, better habits. So this is more or less, I mean, it go much more deeper than that, of course. But it's more or less the sense of mindfulness practices, which I think it's very useful. And you can use it in your daily life. And I mean, because how you keep yourself aware or conscious usually depends on you. You don't need to do 2 hours meditation for it. I mean, it is perfect if you can do it. I mean, all the science is showing it is the best thing you can do to your body. Yoga. But on the other hand, I mean, for a long time, dancing was for me the biggest meditation when I was young. Going to a nightclub and dancing 3 hours without thinking anything, it's exactly the same thing. Exactly. You have to figure out what is for you. I mean, the tools are great. Meditation, breathing techniques, and yoga. I mean, perfect. But maybe you have your own stuff to calm yourself. Because at the end of the day, it's, as we said before, how you can regulate your inner state. So you can do it outside in. You can take medicine. You can take hormones to make you smarter, to make you calm down. You can take therapies. Or you can say, I will try to do it inside out, which is more my area, which I like more. How can I do it from the inside out, using my own abilities, looking, observing, understanding. And then you can create a nice mixture. And another mistake, I wanted to talk about it very shortly, is it's not always about to calm yourself. Yes, when you are in a stress situation, you need to calm yourself. But sometimes you need the energy. Sometimes you need the opposite of it. You don't need to meditate. You need the opposite. You need to raise your energy so you can achieve something. So you have to know when to do what. So it's not always about calming down. Sometimes it's about having the energy to create a new thing. And at the end of the day, my purpose in life, I mean, I want to call it even a purpose. My thinking is always, if you can settle down and if you can touch to your innate potential and you create a calm alertness, this is my best word in life, you are in a good state. So an alertness, but a calm alertness. So I think that's the state you should try to figure out. With all these practices and in conscious consultancy, we try to create some prototypes and some ideas how we can give it to the people in a nice way. And every member of conscious consulting has her or his own way of doing it. And my way is more combining the Western realism with the Eastern mysticism to create a pot of these learnings, I think. I have a small concept. I never stick to that concept, but it's good to have a concept. And then I said, and I will talk about this concept. But when we sit down, I always start with listening. So if there is no connection, there is no coaching. So first, we have to see if we can connect. So, and the foundation of deep connection is deep listening. So I listen a lot. And then the person explains, and then I also need to see the commitment. Because if someone doesn't want to learn, there's not going to be a coaching. So there should be on the other side the commitment of really exploring together. And when we come to that point, when we realize there is a connection and we can explore things together, then I go to real coaching. If I don't see that, then I do the traditional consultancy stuff, creating the brand purpose, creating the brand, doing the culture of the company very mechanically. It works wonderfully. It's not wrong. It's nothing wrong about this. But it's about business and it's vertical consultancy. But when we, but if we decide we're going to explore things together, then it goes to the coaching part. And when we start coaching, it's usually very organic how it goes because the main idea is I am present, I show up, and then I respond to what's coming. And you never know what's going to come. So because you can't predict something, what's going to come. But in a nutshell, I usually start to, funny enough, I realize that I never answered the question till you asked me, but I work a lot about the meaning of success with my clients. So usually we start with what is success for them. So, and after we understood what is success for them, we explore it together. At the end of the day, I'm not the person who is going to tell him what is success. So he needs to figure out what success for him is. And when we figured out what success for him is, then we start to explore how is it possible to come to that state where he can feel he is successful. And there are usually common elements of it. So your business, your inner state, your mental health, your physical health, your relationships with people, with surroundings, and your vision or your purpose, as we say it a lot nowadays, compared with your short success elements. So, because to have a vision is something great, but if you don't have short successes, short gains in life, it's very hard to walk through this way. So, and it's the last topic we considered. So, and then we look how he wants to do it. Some people are very interested in the Eastern traditions and mysticism. We go that way. Some are people are not there at all. And then we figure out what is there for them to create a mental health or to create a good surroundings. So I think it depends on the people. And usually I prefer that they figure out on themselves what is good for them. And when we are stuck, of course, I give a lot of also advisory. I give options. And usually I tell a story from my life, from my experience, and I tell them how I handle this. And then I give other examples, how other people did that. And then I ask him what he wants to do about this. And sometimes, if you're lucky, we come to a plan. So what he can do. And with this plan, he can continue on his own, or he can work with outsiders. If he's very interested in neuroscience and neuroscience leadership, we find out the right person for him. Or if he thinks he never done something for his physical health, I try to introduce this person, people, or he finds himself what he wants to do, and this kind of stuff. Because after one point, we can't help them because I'm a generalist. So I'm not a person who can give a good advice about hormone therapy or psychotherapy or stuff like that. I know that I can give a lot of things about mindfulness and Eastern mysticism or how to be a good leadership, probably can create a leadership program and stuff like that. But there are some areas which is out of my scope. And in that case, I advise people or they can find themselves. So, but I'm the happiest person if we have a plan, because it's always good to have something written in your hand.
Yeah, I can imagine. It seems like a long way to get there to have a plan. So a lot of things have to fit so that you come to this part. Yeah.
Funny enough, I don't know if it's very important to follow this through, but it's so important to see it and to remember what was important for me. Oh, these things were important for me. I forgot them. So maybe you don't need to do it systematically. But if you realize what is important for you in life, so you can do it. I think we talked when we have our first conversation with you about this wave theory. So, I mean, you can't have it all. So you can't have an amazing business, a great relationship. You are going to gym every day and you are totally okay with your mental states. You do everything. So if you are a founder and if you are at the starting point of your career in a startup world, you will be working 80 hours. I mean, 80% of your time. So there's not going to be a lot of time. So the thing is, the magic is here to create a bare minimum. So where, you know, with that I can live. So this kind of a sport and relationship, and then create a support system. Who can help me? Who can help me? Because I know I will be working very long, till 12 o'clock at night. So these things are going to need to be taken care of. So to create this system, the supporting system around, and knowing it's a wave, now it's a working wave, yeah, And then at one point, stop, a little bit slow down, because I need to do for myself a little bit of recovery. So you need to learn to live your life in waves. So you can't have everything at the same time. But when you look at your life, you should see, oh, I worked here a lot. And then I was an amazing mother at that point. And then I was much better with my health. So in the whole life, it should be a balance. Not at that moment, because it's not possible. I mean, if you live in a space-time dimension, so there is not possible to live with that. So I think that's really, really very important. And then people are asking, so, okay, then you're not having a nice life because you're always going out of your comfort zone. So you're, and that's, I think that's not true because, I mean, for me, working a lot doesn't mean you need to go out of your comfort zone. If it's a decision, if it's a clear, conscious decision, it's only enlarging your comfort zone. It's not going out of your comfort zone. If you are doing something willingly, you don't have stress. I didn't have stress. I was working 20 hours sometimes a day with 4 hours sleep. I was not stressed. I was the happiest person on the planet. Because my comfort zone was allowing it because it was what I wanted. As long as you do things that you want, you are not out of your comfort zone. I mean, you can't be successful out of your comfort zone because if you are out of your comfort zone, you are in stress. You're in a big stress. And if you are in stress, your thinking blurs. So you can't really focus. And if you can't focus, you can't create something. So for me, if you are out of your comfort zone, you can't exceed something. The main aim should be enlarging your comfort zone and then do the things. And then you do it willingly. Then you don't have the stress, you don't have the pressure because you are doing it consciously. You're doing because you want it. And then you are not out of your comfort zone.
It's powerful. Well, maybe you can try explain it because you said now also that if it feels right for you, it's not out of your comfort zone. So many times, like, stepping out of your comfort zone doesn't feel right, like scary, or it feels like it's not the right move and everything is preventing you from doing it. But this is exactly what you needed to enlarge in it.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you are stepping out of your comfort zone, it's not the right thing to do. If you feel like that, there is something wrong. So that's, and then you have to look at yourself. I mean, it could be a wrong thought. So it could be fake. So that's why there comes the observation again. So you have to look at it. Why I have this fear? And then you can think clearly. If you make the decision, then it's very easy to be happy. If you say, oh, risk-taking is not my thing. I don't want to do that. I'm very happy. And then you know this is what you want. And you can be happy with what you want, with what you're doing. And if you say, no, I want to try and I want to see. And then you know there are three options. Failure, success, or something in the middle. You see the small difference? So not going out of your comfort zone. Just saying, no, I'm comfortable with it. I am comfortable with the fact that unknowing. I can live with this unknowing. If you feel comfortable, do it. If you don't feel comfortable, don't do it. Are you crazy? You have a brilliant job. Then try find ways to make it more fun.
So yeah, that's how you can distinct it. Like in the future, will you be comfortable with the outcome?
Yeah. And if you think about it, then you see, oh my God, yeah, it's not very crucial. So it's life. It continues.
And this leads me perfectly to my last question of our conversation. From your perspective, what is the secret to a good life?
There is no secret. I think everyone has its own definition for good life. As for me, the good life, as I said before about success, if I know that I am surrounded with loved ones and I get up every day because I know there is something I'm going to do for myself or for this universe. And it makes me energized every day. And that I am aware of what I'm willing and what I'm wanting in life. I mean, I'm having a good life.
Me too. So thank you so much, Celine. Thank you for your time and for all your sharings.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to this episode of the Conscious Consulting Podcast. If you want to dive deeper into the field of conscious consulting, become a part of our community, visit ccg-group.eu and subscribe to our newsletter so we can stay connected. You will find the link in the show notes. We look forward to having you on board.